Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, is Kevin there?
Kevin is joining us. Now, does he count as a caller? You wanted to go for 100 calls on the show today.
He doesn't call to count as a caller or a guest.
I think he counts as both.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, Jason. Kevin. How are you, sir?
Hello, Kevin.
Can I request something?
Of course, sir. Yeah.
Can you change your walk-up song? I'm tired of that song.
I'm not the one, Jason. I'm not the one who plays it. That's somebody. That's in your studio.
I know, what would you pick?
You think I don't know what's in the studio? Can you pick? Hello. Can you just change the song? I'm tired of that song. It's a terrible
pick
song.
Pick one right now. Yeah. Top of your head.
Yeah. Thank you,
Jason. You sound like you're in a great mood today.
Yeah. Awesome mood.
I think that, I'll have to think of another song.
Just think
sure.
About it. Think about it, and then next Friday or next whenever we have you on the show, we'll have a totally different song for you.
All right, Jason wants to get down to business with you. No fluff today, okay? So you got two movie reviews, and you want to talk about the Oscars changing. Why don't you start with the Oscars changing?
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but, I mean, when you guys watch the Oscars, if you even do watch the Oscars, do you watch the whole telecast, or do you just kind of catch up on the highlights the next morning? What do you guys normally do?
Nobody watches the entire telecast except for you.
I watch the red carpet for a little bit, and then it just bores me, and then I go night-night.
I watch the opening monologue. I'll watch the best supporting actor, best supporting actress, which they usually lead off with, and then I'll try and stick with it till the end, but it usually ends so late, I got to get to bed.
So, Jason, you told me to watch the red carpet. Let me ask you guys this. Do you not watch the Oscars because you don't feel like films that you like are generally nominated? I mean, here's the big question right now, is that the Academy Awards they're changing to try and get this popular category, achievement in popular film, because they think that the movies that are generally being nominated in the Best Picture category are movies that no one really has seen from a global audience standpoint perspective, which is kind of true. I mean, last year Dunkirk was nominated. That was a popular film. But films like Three Billboards or Moonlight or films that didn't do a ton of money at the box office are the ones that are kind of rounding out these award seasons. La La Land was a bit of a different call because that had $400 million in the box office. But do you guys, the choice not to watch, I know you guys are sports guys, and you guys go to the movies casually, but you're not like massive, massive, like hardcore Hollywood movie fans.
Right.
But do you not watch the show because you don't feel your films are represented on the stage, or is it just you just don't really like award shows?
Well, there's only a couple. Well, I'll be totally honest here. There's only a couple of awards that would really intrigue me, and to sit there and watch a four-hour show when you only really care about two or three awards, I think is pointless. I'll say this. I don't see enough movies during the year where I can really have an opinion on that. And honestly, Kevin, I don't care if a film gets rewarded. If I see a movie and I like it, okay, in my mind, it's a really good movie. I don't care if it gets rewarded by the critics, to be honest with you.
And, to answer your question from my point of view, it's not about the movies that are selected and whether I saw them. Because if it was about popular movies, I would have been tuning into the People's Choice Awards or the Blockbuster Movie Awards back when that existed. So it's not about the movies that they're selecting and whether I've seen them or not. It's that the bulk of the show is stuff you don't care about.
It's boring.
And then you want to see best actor, best actress, best picture, best director, and they save that for the final 30 minutes, let's say, which is at 11:30.
Kevin, I'll be honest. My life and time are way too important to invest 4 hours watching the stupid Oscars.
Well, a couple things. So to Jason's point and then to JP's point. So to JP's point about the awards that are given out that people don't necessarily care about. So that's one of the other things that they're working on. So this is a tough thing for me as a film person because, listen, I am all for the people behind the scenes, like getting their moment to go on stage, the documentary shorts, the sound editing, the sound mixing. As a person who understands what goes into these movies, I love that those people are recognized, but I understand the general consensus of the idea that yes, those categories are not necessarily entertaining categories for wide audiences to watch. So I think what they're going to try and do is they're shortening the telecast to 3 hours, which is still absurdly long. I think they should go down to 2 hours if they can. But they're going to basically do those awards during commercial breaks and then record them and then bring part of their speeches back for the live broadcast, which I still think is a bit of a shade towards that aspect. But I get that. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and be a film purist and try to be almighty and say, listen, everyone needs to see these awards. I get that aspect. To Jason's point, though, about, you know, the award shows, I guess I could equate it emotionally to the way you guys feel when you watch a Super Bowl or you see your team win, you know, a big championship game. And I get that you guys are more invested in that sports element of things. So if you could just imagine my emotional element of seeing a film win Best Picture or, you know, get awarded that way, it's just the highest honor, just like the Super Bowl the World Cup for the Caps Stanley Cup for the Caps. So I just think it's an interesting.
But you're a very small percentage. I mean, you're in the industry. That's what you do for living. You're very, very small percentage. Most people feel the way we do.
And Kevin, I wouldn't dilute it. Whatever they're going to do here with popular movies, if it's about the Best Picture, it should be about the Best Picture. They shouldn't dilute it. But I do agree with your premise. I watched a little of your back and forth with Steve on Fox 5 before you jumped on with us. If a movie is what we believe one of the best movies of the year, and it just happens to be popular, it should still be nominated. So, like, yeah. For me, I love Black Panther.
Right.
Some people might not love Black Panther, but I love Black Panther. That might be worthy of a nomination, but that type of movie usually doesn't get nominated.
That's the exact problem. That's my whole solution here, JP and Jason, is this whole concept of the Oscars have they're in a box. They're in Cakes' box. Like, they're in this whole thing where they think an Oscar movie is this type of movie. So, like, generally a drama, The King's Speech, you know, Three Billboards. I mean, listen, these are great movies. Don't get me wrong. They're very good movies. But you guys cannot disagree with me that when you watch a film like that, you say to yourself, that's an Oscar film. I mean, I think you see a trailer nowadays and go, that's going to be an Oscar movie. A Star is Born, that's going to be an Oscar movie. So I think all they need to do is rethink what that is. Just start opening your mind to horror, comedy, and drama. Horror, comedy, and action movies. Action movies are put aside. So that the whole idea of this popular category, JP, you bring up Black Panther. All this is going to do is allow them to scoot over films like Black Panther or Avengers Infinity War or Deadpool 2 or Ready Player One or Quiet Place, films that were very popular this year. And it's going to allow them to put them in this popular category and then not feel bad about nominating them for Best Picture. Now, you can get nominated in both categories, but the problem is now that this category exists, Black Panther, if it wins the popular category but doesn't get nominated for Best Picture, what is that saying? Is that saying that your movie's not good enough?
All right, so here's my question to JP. So you bring up Black Panther, which you liked.
Yes.
Okay.
Quiet Place, which I liked.
Okay, I like Quiet Place,
it's
too.
It's very good.
But if Black Panther doesn't get nominated for Best Picture, do you really care?
No.
Right.
That's my point. Here's the thing. I don't think Black Panther. Listen, I love Black Panther. I think it's a great film. I don't think it's the best movie of the year. I think Avengers Infinity War is a much better film. That's kind of where I get to the example here, where The Dark Knight in 2008, The Reader, this drama with Kate Winslet got nominated in the fifth slot of the Best Picture category. The Dark Knight did not get nominated. So next year they basically opened it up to 10 films because they realized that the film The Dark Knight should be nominated for Best Picture. So I think the problem is now that the Avengers Infinity War movie, which I think is one of the most brilliantly edited, shot, directed films of the year. But here's the thing. You look at Avengers Infinity War, you think, oh, superhero film, comic book film. That's not an Oscar movie, right? That's the general thought process of watching a film like that. That movie will never be nominated for Best Picture. So that's the issue here, is that this dumb, idiotic, popular category is now going to take away from the essence of how good these movies are and put them into a category where it's basically saying you're not good enough to be our Best Picture, but we'll put you here because a lot of people saw your film. The only reason they're doing it, JP, is to get people to watch their show. It's nothing to do with the award itself. They want people to tune in because they want people to see the movie that they've been seeing all year. But if your movie's popular, Doesn't that mean that people generally liked it? I mean, listen, Avatar made $2.7 billion. I did not like Avatar. That's a weird one to bring up. But over the years, there have been popular films that have been nominated for Best Picture. Star Wars, E.T., Titanic won Best Picture. They used to nominate these big, gigantic blockbusters. Now it just feels like it's all these artsy drama films, which I'm okay with. But why don't you open your mind up to other types of movies? Bring a horror movie in. Give Mad Max Best Picture. And like, it's very strange to me how they're inside this box.
All right, we're going to let you go. One last question. This is obviously a huge story in your world, okay? Are people in Hollywood, are the actors upset?
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, if you look online, it is all negative. I don't think I've seen a single person say this is a good idea. Because it's essentially belittling all the other popular films that are great. And like, JP, you bring up Black Panther. People want to see Black Panther at the Oscars, so why not create a category that allows them to easily put it in there, which is the popular category? That's the problem.
Yeah, it's
diluting. Really big issue.
All right. You got a minute to talk about The Meg and Dog Days.
Yeah, real quick. I know Jason's most anticipated movie of the year is Dog Days. So that movie is a 2.5 out of 5. It's not great.
Jason likes dogs.
What is Dog Day about?
I know. It's basically like an interweaving story of multiple characters that are all brought together through dogs. So there's Vanessa Hudgens, Nina Dobrev.
Not underdogs, just real dogs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Eva Longoria. I mean, I would just wait for the rental. And then The Meg, I know people are excited about this one. This is essentially Jason Statham fighting a 75-foot shark, if you can kind of imagine that. I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. The guy who directed it did National Treasure, and I gave it my coveted 3.5 out of 5. I thought it was fine. It worked, and it's worth seeing if you're a fan of it. Everyone keeps asking me, is this like Sharknado? No, it's basically in the middle of what Sharknado and Jaws is. So it's not as serious as Jaws. It's not as campy as Sharknado. It's kind of right in the middle. So gotcha. If you're into those movies, definitely check it out.
I shark movies. I saw that Gun movie with Blake Lively in the shark.
Yeah. That was terrible. Shallow. The Shallow was so bad.
Hey, Kevin.
I'm going to see Blake Lively next Sunday. I'm excited.
So jealous.
Kevin, it's going to be okay.
Hey, Kevin.
Hang in there.
Yeah.
Kevin, make sure you have a different walk-up song and text Valdez.
All right, I'll take that. And by the way, that's somebody I was saying that's in the studio playing those songs. That's Valdez and Drab. I was just saying it off the top of my head because you kind of threw me for a loop there, so I might apologize.
We know that you know who they are.
All right.
It's going to be all right. Relax on the whole changing of the Oscars.
Yeah, you'll survive.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline is Mark DeRosa MLB Network. Today, your Nats trying to salvage a series with the Braves, and the game's exclusively on Facebook. At 1 p.m.
And here on 106.7 The Fan.
Yes.
And Mark's going to call the game with Scott Braun and FP Santangelo on Facebook.
Look at that.
At 1 o'clock. D-Ro, what's up, buddy?
How we doing?
Props for getting that Facebook money, D-Ro.
That's right. Is this the first time you will ever call a game? Have you ever called a game before?
I did two. When I first retired, I did two. And I remember walking in the first time. I, as of right now, I'm saying I prefer the studio stuff just because I'm a little bit more comfortable at it.
Right.
But I had the lady from Fox tell me two things. She said, don't start a story with two outs, and when in doubt, shut up. that's kind of been my rule of thumb when I've called the games. But I did one Facebook game. I did the Braves-Toronto earlier in the season and had a blast with it. So I jumped on a train last night from Jersey and flew up here, and I'm literally walking around the shipyard. What the heck? This place has exploded since I left.
Yeah, you're right down the street from us.
I wish you would have come in studio. If I'd have known you were in town, we would have pushed for it.
You might be staying at the Homewood Suites. We have no idea.
Yeah, are you staying at the Homewood Suites?
I won't give away where exactly I'm staying, but I'm walking around like, none of this existed when I was here 5 years ago.
I heard on the news, D-Row, I heard on the news yesterday or the day before that it's the hottest or most popular growing neighborhood in any metropolitan city is the Navy Yards, Washington Navy Yards.
It, I mean, I'm blown away. I actually didn't know where Nats Park was. I was in a cab last night coming out of the train station, and I'm like, yeah, M Street down close to the yard. You couldn't even see the yard until you got close. That's all that used to be here. So,
right,
this is pretty awesome.
You know what else they got down here in Navy Yards? Hot millennials. Just, I mean, they're walking around everywhere. It's unbelievable. Hey, Mark, I did not see the game, the Nats game last night, because I played golf during the day, and then I went and had cocktails with some buddies. So I didn't watch.
Rough life.
I didn't watch any of the game.
No, tough life.
But we're taking calls, and you know, there's a lot of frustrated Nats fans. We're taking calls this morning. A lot of people are criticizing Davey for one particular move. They've been criticizing Davey all year. And I get it. You know, when a team is underachieving and struggling, they're going to go point to the manager. But last night, and I'm not sure if you saw this, but last night in the second inning, top of the second, the Nats were up 1-0. There's two outs, and Culberson's up. Now, Charlie Culberson is basically Al Kaline in the series.
Yeah.
He's up with two outs, and Davey decides to pitch to him. Tommy Malone on the hill. He decides to pitch to him instead of walking him to load the bases. Foltynewicz is up next. Good move, bad move.
I come from the school of Bobby Cox. Bobby Cox never let the 8-hole hitter beat him, ever. Did not matter if third base is open, that's still a base open. So that's kind of how I've always approached it. Granted, he did have two strikes on him, if I'm not mistaken, and completely missed over the heart of the plate. We were talking about this last night. The Nats are fighting for their postseason life right now, and they're being forced to give the ball to Tommy Malone because of all the injuries and all. That's the bigger question for me. Yeah, should Davey have walked Charlie Culberson, who's absolutely killed him, to get to the pitcher? Yeah, I definitely think that's the move. The bigger move for me is, how are you going to make a serious postseason run these last five weeks? When you're giving starts to guys that you had no idea were going to even touch the ball when the season started. Right. I know you got to, you got to bear down. You can't help yourself with who's going to get hurt and who's not going to get hurt. But at the end of the day, that's the bigger thing for me.
Yeah. Well, look, and we took a bunch of calls as well from Nats fans who really wanted to add a starter before the deadline. Now, there's still time. You can still add a starter before August 31st, obviously. But, you know, we talked about Cole Hamels and Happ and, you know, other guys. You know, they had a chance to get Arrieta in the offseason, and they didn't want to pay him. But you're right. And I like Tommy Malone, but he's not a guy, especially when he's pitching against Foltynewicz.
Absolutely.
You're right.
Tommy Malone,
good move.
I was saying this. I came up in kind of that as the steroid era was kind of just in full force, and then it kind of drifted away towards 04. And then from a pocket from like 04 to like 2010, you would occasionally get that 3-4-5 guy that teams could potentially feast on. Well, in today's modern game of everybody throwing 95+, those guys are obsolete now, except for a token few. And Tommy Malone's kind of one of those guys that's kind of hung on. But in today's game, when guys are swinging for homers 0-2, if you ain't got stuff to get by them, serious stuff to get by them, they're not changing their approach. They're not grounding out like we used to do and moving runners over. So he's got to be so fine the entire start that one mistake, Charlie Culberson, who, again, a utility player who should be looking to, you know, push a ball to right field 10 years ago, is now looking to jump ship.
Mark, can you tell us why Joe Simpson, the Braves announcer, is so curmudgeonly? Why was he questioning the age of Juan Soto? A few weeks ago, he was questioning the professionalism of a few Dodgers hitters during BP because they're wearing, a stand-up-to-cancer T-shirt.
Yeah.
What's going on with Joe Simpson?
I can't defend him for the Juan Soto thing. That's just wrong. He knows that's wrong. I've known Joe a long time. He's a good man. I think for me, again, I go back to Bobby Cox. Bobby Cox had very, very few rules, but one was you wear your BP jersey so everyone in the park knows who you are, and you always wear your hat straight. Those were his two rules. So in today's day and age, I'm not saying I agree with him or not, because the minute I got moved to Texas, I was wearing a cut T-shirt like the rest of the guys for BP, and I loved it.
Yeah.
So I didn't necessarily like the way the Braves did everything, but you're an employee. You expect the decisions of your manager, and that's what we did from Gary Sheffield, Chipper Jones on down the line. Meet BP, hat on straight, and that's what Joe's always known. Mm-hmm. So maybe a joke gone wrong, but he saw all the Dodgers players kind of wearing whatever they wanted, and that's not what he had grown accustomed to in the game. So I knew where he was coming from. It just it falls on deaf ears in today's game.
It really does. One last question about the Nats, then we'll move on and talk about some of the other races. In my opinion, Mark, the biggest reason, biggest factor that this team has struggled this year is Strasburg. He wasn't pitching like vintage Strasburg when he was healthy, and then he always hits the DL twice a year. We know this. He's a $175 million nightmare when it comes to that. And let's just—he's probably going to miss 10 starts plus with all the DL stints, right? And he's still not back.
Yeah.
I mean, if those 10 starts, he's 7-3. They got 65 wins right now. I mean, that's the biggest reason that, and that's why they have to go to guys like Tommy Malone and Jeffrey Rodriguez, because they can't rely on them.
Exactly. Trust is the biggest thing. I agree with you 100%. I know Bryce got off to a terrible start, but he was still posting every day. Straz has been, and again, playing here in 2012, I know how good a guy Straz is. I know how hard a worker Straz is, but at the end of the day, can your teammates rely on you and trust you throughout the course of the season? Injuries are going to pop up. I get that, but it just seems like he's open. He's allowed himself to be consistently questioned ever since he sat down in 2012. Right. Once he did that, you leave the floodgates open to being buried by the national media or everyone around you, because that looks like a selfish act. He chose himself over the team at that moment. Now, we knew that going in spring training. I can think back to spring training. We had heard that that would happen, that he was going to sit it down once we got to the postseason. I'll be honest with you, I tried to talk him out of it multiple times as we started rolling, because I don't think anyone really realized in 2012 how good this team could potentially be. So I think maybe there was some belief that we weren't going to win the division, and it would just kind of be a Jordan Zimmerman type situation. Mm. And it ended up being, hey, we're the best team in the National League, and we got a chance to win the World Series, and we're going to sit our best starter down. So once you do that, I think Straz loses the ability to kind of have excuses.
How did he react when you brought it up to him those multiple occasions?
Like Straz, very low key. I said, Straz, I gave him a myriad of options. I said, if you're worried about future financial success, go knock on Mike Rizzo's door right now and sign your deal and pitch tonight for us. They'll sign you.
Mm-hmm.
Take your $175 million in 2012, and I need you starting game one against the Cardinals. But that didn't happen. But what I'm saying is he leaves himself open for the scrutiny by the way his career has transpired. Because when he's right, he's one of the best pitchers in the game. And that guys wouldn't be as upset if they felt they were getting a 3-4 out on the mound. But you're getting a 1-1.
Right.
When he goes to the post and he's right, and it's frustrating.
It's Bish, Cakes, and JP on an open line Thursday. If you want to jump on, 800-636-1067 is the number. Valdez, could you watch Tiger just hit on the range all day?
Yes.
Oh, he definitely would do that with his pants off.
Would you do the same for, I don't know, Brooks Koepka?
Probably, because he's dreamy. I know my wife could. My wife closes her eyes and wishes I was Brooks Koepka.
How about Patrick Reed? He's not such a dreamy guy.
I probably could.
Really?
When a pro hits a ball, it's
okay,
just
so it's
silly.
Pro hitting the ball.
I couldn't watch Drab on the range.
I was thinking about, or me.
Why are you telling me to go Drab?
By the way, I need to thank my guy, Matt Jarvis. I actually played out at Laytonsville yesterday. I wanted to kind of get back in the mix. Didn't go so well.
Actually, really? Went
well at times. I had a birdie. It was my first birdie. So that was nice, but I had a lot of bogeys too.
Yeah, sure, you mixed in the bogeys.
But Laytonsville is in great shape. I went out there, hadn't been there for a couple weeks, and played. So thank you to Matt Jarvis.
Did Valdez tell you to bring up golf?
No, he didn't. But I was actually thinking about the previous question. Just saw the TV, it's still on Tiger Woods. It seems like it's been on Tiger for 20 minutes. And going back to that question where the guy was asking about Brandel Chablis, and yeah. I think he was just, being bombastic to an extent, trying to be provocative, that
Shambly has a lot of hot takes. You know, we talked about hot takes.
Yeah.
Shambly is the hot take master.
My point is, yes, Tiger is physically gifted, but there are tons of guys who are similarly gifted. And a lot of people say, like Dustin Johnson, for example. Wouldn't Dustin Johnson like be a perfect body for a golfer, super physically gifted? He's won one major. So who squandered more, Tiger or Dustin Johnson? I mean, Tiger just became number one for a long time, became super dominant. Now, maybe Chambly, I didn't hear the statement, was talking about his mental acumen and things like that to go along with the physical skills, but I think there are tons of guys.
Maybe he talked about the fact that he missed so much time and he could have won more majors and he could be at 18 or beyond Jack. Who knows? I didn't hear him say it. I'd have to go back and listen to it, but it's hard to say that he didn't get the most out of his career when he's got 14 majors and 80 wins.
Right.
But that's his opinion. I thought Valdez wanted to bring up Goff because he lies to everyone and says he shoots 76.
Why are you
at Riverbend when he really shot 86?
Why are you sullying my good name?
All right, let's pull back the curtains.
Yes. So let's get the radio insider here.
Valdez and I played in the Trump member guest last
radio
week.
Insider.
Last Friday.
Played with him?
No, different groups.
Okay.
I played with my buddy Puma Pete. And so a couple other guys. He played with some other guys. Our buddy Frank Alfaginnis, who owns Capital Meat.
By the way, I'm wearing my Puma shorts as we speak.
So am I. And I shot 84. And when I saw Valdez in the bar after the round, he goes, I shot 79. Now, I had seen Valdez on the course, probably.
We passed.
12 or 13 holes in.
Yeah.
We passed each other. And he asked me how I was doing. I said, I was probably like 11 over at that time. He goes, you were like 7 over.
No, I was not 7 over. I was 4 over.
Oh, you were 4 over at that time?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. You weren't 7 over. I think you had told me 5. So I'm thinking, oh my God, really? Because Trump is not an easy golf course.
And it was very windy that day.
It was windy. It was long. It was soft. So the balls weren't rolling. So anyway, so after the round, he goes, I shot 79. I said, what? Because he wasn't better than me three years ago.
Jason's seen me at my worst. Yeah, basically shooting 95.
Right, but anytime I asked you how you played in the last 3 years, you said, I shot 85, 87, right. 86, whatever. Now, you shoot 79 at Trump, okay? And then we play at Riverbend yesterday. Again, not
so
playing
together.
You played
with him?
Not playing together.
Okay.
I saw him on
the
course.
Why don't you ever play with him?
Yes, he plays earlier. It's just it's just a different schedule.
Gotcha. I played at 11:30. I don't like to play at 1:30 or 2.
I can't get out there at 11:30.
So I see him
making
the turn. I'd finished 9. He is just coming on the course. I said, hey, man, it's hot. It's tough out there.
Sweltering.
And Riverbend's a great golf course, but when it's really hot and it's a hilly course, it's just a tough golf course. So I ended up shooting 83. Drabby put on the outline 84. It's wrong. You're sullying me. I shot 83. All right. I get a text from Valdez yesterday.
By the way, when I was sending this text, I was talking to my buddy Jack. Yeah. I said Jason's going to be so bitter when I send him this text.
This is Matt Valdez.
He sends me a text, just four numbers in a dash. He sends 37-39. Okay, so he shot 37 on the front. He shot 39 on the back. In my math, that's a 76. I said, no effing way. You shot 76 on that course because it was hot. It was hard. And I said, he's lying.
Why are you a hater?
Because I can't believe Valdez is shooting in the 70s on the regular.
To me, I've never gotten to that level, but I used to be a low 90s player, okay? I was playing more frequently, like three times a month, let's say. Not once a week, but probably three times a month in the summer. And so you get better. He's been playing a lot. He works at a golf course. He hits balls all the time. His putting maybe doesn't work on the putting range, but he's out there enough.
You can play a lot and still be shooting the same scores.
There's a big gap between breaking 80
it's true.
And breaking 90.
It's true, but I'll tell you I played for the first time yesterday in a while, and it's the little things like I used a 9-iron when I should have used a wedge, and that totally screws you for like 2 or 3 shots if you hit it beyond the green, and then you got to chip it back, and it's experience. There's more than just hitting the ball consistently, it's that experience of knowing, all right, this shot is 150 and I'm on a hill. What's the correct club to use? Well, he's getting out there enough. His course management is at top notch right now.
He knew that 5 years ago. He knew
it takes experience.
I'm better at it now than I was.
You were playing a ton of golf 3-4 years ago. He's getting better, no doubt. Don't take this the wrong way, JP.
So you think he lied?
No. Of course
he's
not. I'm just
being
bitter.
Funny.
I'm just bitter.
You're jealous that he surpassed you as the best player on the junk.
Well, because I was better than him every time we played.
Okay. You passed the baton. He's younger. He's
I
better.
Can't handle it.
Well,
I can't handle it.
There was a period of time when EB was better than you, but you're better than EB now. Why did you become a better player than EB? Because you started playing all the time.
Well, he stopped playing.
Right. That's what it comes down to.
Okay, well, I didn't stop playing.
If you start playing all the time again, then you can chase him and have battles.
I just can't believe that he's shooting 76s on some of the toughest courses in the area. I can't.
Good
so,
for him.
So every time he sends me a text, I shot
76. Does it get you bitter?
Yes.
You don't feel happy for him at all?
No.
But are you also questioning the validity of the scores?
I think he's lying. I think he's giving himself seven footers.
No chance. Because I made a 10 footer for bogey on the par three that I sailed the green on.
Because to shoot 79 at Trump and 76 at Riverbend, that big dummy, I just can't imagine.
Maybe you now, I will say the surprising thing is.
I'm going to have to see it for
myself. The surprising thing is, I played with him a few years ago, and that was when he was, I guess, just starting to play frequently again. And he was, you know, a 90s player, maybe low 90s type player. The surprising thing is, the only information I have on his game, besides what he tells me, is the one shot that was videoed by AWOD from the Purple Heart tournament. Uh-huh. And the Purple Heart tournament, it was Cakes, Pete Medhurst, Drabby, and Valdez.
Yes.
And the one shot which they showed
Fantastic Four.
Was, I believe, a pitching wedge. Maybe it was a 9-iron. And Valdez completely sailed the green.
Sailed the green.
All right.
So, from that information, it didn't look like a guy who was shooting 76.
Right.
Because he wasn't like he stuck it, but that's just one shot.
I want all my golf buddies to call in that were my witnesses yes. yesterday and at Trump on Friday.
Yeah, your good name is being sullied right
now. I believe
now.
He shot 87, and he's just telling people he shot 76.
Well, why would I tell you?
Hey, did you post it?
Yes, I posted it. Jason, I don't want to post it.
Your index is currently what?
It's a 7.
7 flat?
Yes, but it's going to jump after those two scores. So it changes. It changes at the first.
It's not going to jump. It's going to drop.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So it changes on the 1st and 15th of the month.
Right. Hey, I shot an 87. There was just 3 holes to go.
Yeah, you still had some meat on the bone.
So, hey, Jason, why don't you put your nuts on the line a little bit?
Have a match
and set up the match with Valdez.
Oh, that would.
I'm not claiming I'm better. I'm obviously not better than him if he's shooting 76.
But if he's shooting 87, you are.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, but also
I know
the
he's
pressure.
Not lying.
It's been years.
I want to think that he's shooting.
It's
87.
Been years. Hey, we did the Clash of Blue Mash. We did the Homies Challenge, and we did the War at Westfield.
We're kind of overdue.
It's been years.
We're overdue for something.
I'm not going to put my that kind of pressure on myself when I've only played 8 rounds since a severe 6-month shoulder injury. I'm not going.
Well, we
maybe
can build
we
it up.
We can revisit that in the fall.
The generation battle.
No, dude. I don't care about the bits. You can do your own bit. You do your own bits.
We call it the match generations.
Good for the show.
I am just shocked. The show's doing fine. We're getting 10 shares. I'm just shocked that this guy is shooting in the 70s on the reg.
Right.
Not on Muni courses that JP plays. All right, these are some of the
toughest. Hey, don't show. My Muni courses are really nice.
All right. I'm just saying. These are very difficult. These are 130.
I understand that.
These are 135 slope courses.
Yes.
Look, if you're doing that, props to you, bro. Props to you. I don't know how you're doing it, but you must be an amazing putter.
What's going on with Sir Nick? Because Drab was like all upset that like at 9:13 to pull back the curtain at 9:13 he was saying go to break, and I think we broke at 9:14. Did that 1 minute cost us like 10?
No. CBS texted me at 9:18, said they're running 5 minutes behind, but we'll still have our 10 minutes with them.
Yeah. Oh, we will.
He'll be calling in any minute.
He's on the radio tour.
Well, if he calls in at 9:30, then we're gonna have to push him to 9:40.
We'll make it work.
Okay. By the way, Bellerive in St. Louis not treating the golfers very well here early.
Oh, really?
Tony Finau is 3-over through 4. Xander Schauffele's 2-over through 4. Henrik Stenson's already 1-over. He bogeyed 1. So Valdez, we had heard the greens were really beat up because of the weather. You can't do anything with the weather. But maybe the fact that it's a very long golf course.
It's supposed to be playing super soft today, or at least right now this morning.
And, you know, there are, I think 11 of the 14 fairways are dogleg lefts. So you do have to draw it, or if you're a lefty, you got to cut it. So Ryan Fox, Austin Cook, Brant Snedeker, Jim Furyk, Ian Poulter, all one under.
All right, but we are joined right now by Sir Nick Faldo on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. He, of course, is the lead analyst for golf on CBS. You can catch him throughout the PGA Championship alongside Jim Nantz on the 18th hole. Third and final round coverage begins at 2 p.m. Saturday and Sunday on CBS. Good morning, Nick.
Morning. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
We're just talking about the golf course. I'm not real familiar with it. The last time it was the host of a major was 1992. For the PGA, so I don't know much about it. I know it's long. I know there's a lot of dogleg lefts. What can you tell us about the course?
Yeah, exactly. That's the theme. You know, there's 12 holes that basically go right to left. So in the old days, that was due to the guys who hit a draw. You know, Gary Player won, Nicky Price won, you know, back in 92. And, you know, so now it maybe will suit some of those players. You've got a natural draw of the ball in Patrick Reed, Masters champion, and Bubba, of course, lefty, goes the other way, but that's basically a draw, the lefty fade, so it's working around the corner. But so many of the guys are so long now, it's a different style of game. Mm-hmm. They can cut the corners, and especially onto these fairways, this zoysia grass, and after the rain, it's lovely and soft and springy. So you hit a decent tee shot, if it's landing on the fairway, it will stay on the fairway. So that's huge. There's so many guys who can hit it out there 300 plus through the air, you know, and cut the corners. They don't have to play them as a right to left hole. They just send it over the corner, hit their fade off the left edge, and off they go.
How did you play it when you were playing it in 92?
Along the ground. I couldn't get it airborne.
Really? You were struggling? Did you struggle in that?
I was worm burners that week. No, it's all a blur to me. You know, 26 years ago, I can't remember what I had for lunch yesterday. I obviously came here. I was open champion and played well. I had a bad third round. The media tent reminded me that, you know, apparently I lost concentration and told me to, you know, remember my day. And I said, well, how can I remember my day if I lost concentration?
Right.
Anyway, so it's a different ball game now. There's so many guys drive it great, and then there's wedges. And some, you know, I talked to Tommy Fleetwood. He said, you know, they're playing very long. You know, either in a wedge into some holes or four irons. It didn't seem like there was much in between. So I have a very short, very long. But who knows how it will change. You know, there was a bit of wind up yesterday afternoon, so... And I believe with the scoring already, it's going to be a tough golf course. It's a major. It should be.
Yeah.
Nick, skipping ahead a year, next year's PGA Championship will be at Bethpage Black, but it won't be at the same time on the schedule. It'll be in May. Are you in favor of them pushing up the PGA going forward?
Well, I am. Yeah, I think if I was a golfer, if I was a player, well, you're going to start your season in America, you've obviously got the West Coast swing. So that's your choice. But, you know, you're going to start gearing up in April for the players. Sorry, in March. You're going to start gearing up in early March. And then you've got the players, which has gone back to its old date. So that will be huge. Then you obviously go to Augusta in April. And then you're going to come here. So playing, I think it's great they're going to come and play some, you know, different venues at different time of year. Bethpage Black is a fantastic golf course. It will be amazing. It could be amazingly difficult. Or a real challenge, a bit like the players in May, could be, you know, the weather up north in May could be pretty chilly. And so I like that. Then they go to the U.S. Open, then they go to the Open, and obviously then they've got the FedEx Cup. So, wow, you're going to get a really condensed 6 months of really hard golf. So I think that's great for our tour, that we're going to have a really great hard focus. And then you can go off and travel. And obviously European Tour has a huge, they have their Rolex series all through kind of October, November, and then if you wanted to, you could have Christmas Day off for a change, you know, have a rest day,
right,
and then start again.
Well, I know the players have publicly said that they like it, but behind closed doors, do you think they like the condensed schedule with all the tough golf courses in a short amount of time?
No, I think that's good. I mean, I would, you know, people want you to, it's a tough sport to play, especially the leading guys. They're in demand. They, you know, everybody wants them. You know, they want them 12 months of the year, and you can't go 12 months of a year. So if we do have America really has a season, which will be March, April, May, and June, and then they all head to Europe ready for the Open, Then they come back for the FedEx Cup, and then they can head off back to, you know, around the world through October to work. That's 8 months. I'd settle to that. Have an 8-month season and then have an easy 4 months doing other things, play wherever you want to play, you know, or not, and then come out and really concentrate. I would, if that was me, I would love that.
Now, so let's talk about Tiger. Tiger likes to usually take that week off before a major and get prepped up and go practice at home and clean up anything he has to. And he didn't have that luxury this year because of the way the schedule works. So he played the WGC in Akron and did not play well at all on the weekend. And then, of course, he's got to go to St. Louis without really knowing the golf course and get right back into it. Did you think he looked a little gassed over the weekend at the WGC?
I did. I commented on it, and of course, you know, you get a lot of stick, but, you know, he tightened up to me. He came out and hit a couple of poor wedge shots right out the gate, first couple of holes, which to me is not technical in the middle of a week. That's, you know, physical. I thought his lower back started to tighten up, and he couldn't quite clear himself. And then he was climbing out a few bunkers very gingerly by the end of the round. So I think things tightened up, and it was stinky hot, and now, this is all part of it. You know, these guys, you know, you've got to be physically really strong. I mean, I'm really flexible. And then you've got to be technically good, and you've got to be mentally strong and, you know, and very balanced. And you've got to put all those together. Look at the last three winners. I mean, that's how Molinari was fantastic technically and fantastic mentally. Then go to Dustin when he wins in Canada. He was obviously fantastic physically and obviously wins. So that's strong mentally. Justin Thomas was technically really good last week and obviously very confident. So you've got to have a couple of those running at absolutely spot on. And, you know, Tiger's grinding away to get physically great, technically great, and then mentally, you know, he's testing himself. Hasn't won for 5 years, hasn't been a dominant player for 10 years. So none of that is easy. You don't just flip a switch in this game just because you won before.
Right.
There's no guarantees. It doesn't mean, oh, yeah, it's like, wow. It's the now time, as you know. It's, do I trust myself right now on this shot? Have I got it? And if you're just a little off with that trust, or you, it's a tough game. If you hit a poor shot and things magnify, don't they? And your scorecard multiplies. So that's, you've got to be so strong. Look how strong mentally Molinari must have been.
Oh yeah,
for the first. I mean, that was really impressive. You know, that was very, you know, a lot of people will look at that. If I could take something from him, that mental strength he showed. We know he's consistently, but that mental strength to challenge yourself to win the Open and play that well was really impressive.
Talking to Sir Nick Faldo, the legendary golfer, of course, works at CBS, calling the PGA Championship with Nancy this weekend. I wanted to ask you about, well, first of all, before we get some of your predictions for the PGA and who you think will play well, do you think, sticking on Tiger here, do you think Tiger will be on the Ryder Cup team?
I think yes. I mean, because I think there may be a ploy. I mean, in Scotland, Paul McGinley, he told Graham McDowell and Victor Dubuisson, right, you're just playing foursomes. You're great at foursomes. That's all you're doing on day one, day two, and obviously a singles. You're just playing three. I mean, I think Jim Furyk could say to Tiger, I think you'd be great in four ball.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.